It's the Two Johnnies Podcast. Two Johnnies Podcast. Two Johnnies recording a podcast.
Hello, hello, hello.
You're welcome to the Two Johnnies Podcast, bringing you all the mayhem and news from the world of the Two Johnnies.
I'm still Johnny B.
And I'm still Johnny Smacks. Welcome to podcast 168, coming to you like cattle being led out onto fresh grass, roaring and going wild. And hi, I've got a story on calves later on. On this week's podcast, we chat to a man who once commuted from Canada to play hurling. Former Clare hurler, all-star, and a lovely man, Tony Griffin, joins us on the podcast.
And he says, a farmer without a tractor is like a Cork man without an opinion.
Oh.
Noel Furlong will be here with the news.
She brings a modicum of respectability to this podcast. Maureen is here with her mystery topic.
And as traditional, I guess it's a modern tradition of the female GA athletes being absolutely on fleek with their tan.
Yep.
We round off the podcast with our
Yurts and Dirts of the week. Really got to get some lessons on the tan, you know.
Who? You?
Yeah, no, you.
Me?
I'm joking. Before commencing with proceedings, matters arising from last week's podcast.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, on boners.
We just mentioned female GA players and fake tan, and then the first bit of correspondence is a boner.
How far in did we get? Did we get a minute?
Yeah.
Not even.
What are we in? Wow, that was quick.
We promised there's some great, wholesome content coming up shortly. But
deeper in the show.
Kevin says, just on a surface level.
Just on boners.
Kevin said, similarly to the poor divil who got the CAT scan, I had torn a hamstring playing football with the club and I had to go get an MRI. They put me in the gear anyway. This is the hospital gear, I suppose. You don't have to go in your club gear. You're going into that hospital now. You're going representing this fucking club. I'll tell you why, you're going to be the best patient you ever had.
He had a club suit and tie on. Full suit. Is it a full suit?
So they put him in the gear anyway, the hospital gear.
Right.
And who was there? Only this fine bird who introduced me to the machine. Hello, meet MRI. MRI, this is Mick. And I says to Renia, well, how's things? Nice to meet you.
Wow. Strong opener.
Strong opener. Yeah, wow. This guy, he must be captain.
My man.
They gave me headphones and they lay me down in the bed that glides into the actual MRI. There was real soft music on and I was chilled out and happy. And I happened to fall asleep. I woke up and had a bull horn on me. And you're not allowed to move in the MRI scanner, you know. So I had to wait until I was out and she took the headphones off, half laughing at me. And I obviously said nothing. I didn't need to. I walked out of the room like John Wayne. Kevin, look, you're representing the club. At least you're on a big full horn.
Yeah.
The last thing you want is to go in there and kind of a half a horn and pure disrespect, disgrace the whole club, you know?
I wonder, did you bring an old lad in with him who was just shouting, come on, get a bigger horn, a bigger fucking horn than that. Yeah. You're useless, your old lad had a massive horn. He took the top off the machine when he went in.
You have more blood in you than that. Come on.
On to fuck.
Get it into you. Come on.
Jesus, you're the main show of us all.
Hunting the red blood cells down his body. Come on. Come on. Get into that, Mickey.
Get hard. Get hard.
Come on up. Come on.
On social media, Orla said, I was listening to your recent podcast.
Come on, Orla.
Where you spoke about how Facebook used to be a way to connect between home and abroad. Reminding me of 10 years ago, myself and my boyfriend, now husband, were on holidays in Thailand. Well, there's loads of things to rest from. He is a farmer. I know, a farmer in Thailand, the height and oceans, says Orla. Our phones wouldn't work and our only contact with home was logging on to Facebook in an internet cafe. Remember them.
Man, some throwback there.
We had private messages to our siblings to tell them the story and to pass the message on to the mammies. One day when we logged on, my boyfriend got a private message from his brother to say the bull was sick. He was looking for advice on what to do with him. My boyfriend gave him the advice and he took it back to the mother. On hearing, James had been in contact from Thailand with instructions for the bull. She asked, how did we hear? His brother told her, through Facebook. She had a look of shock and horror on her face and said, oh Jesus, the whole parish will know about the sick bull. With no understanding of Facebook, she thought it had been posted publicly about the bull. For the fun of it, we got family and friends from around the country to ring her and ask how the bull was doing, telling her they saw that the bull was sick on Facebook. She still is unaware she was the centre of her joke to this day. That's very good. That is very good.
What did Niamh say, John? Keep her going, you're going well.
Niamh said, the only time I have my phone out is when I'm home alone or like I am now on the bus on the way home. It's a big problem in my office. We've young girls in the office. I'm 39, they're 19 to 21 years old and they can't be off their phones. Surely an Instagram or Facebook post is not that important. The minute I or the manager leave the office, they hop on the phones. I'm really showing my age, but I remember the good old days when mobile phones didn't exist and you knocked on your friend's door to ask them to come out to play. Social media and the like has ruined society.
How do people be on social media when they're at work? It's become acceptable now. 10 years ago, if your boss caught you on Facebook, yeah, he'd give out to you.
When I was working in Superfellow, like a fella used to like wheel around a trolley, like, you know, yeah, one of the trolleys that you stock, like you'd be stocking shelves, like,
and
he'd
be, or just, combi, like,
yeah, and he just have the phone in his hand texting. Manager came over and took it. So if I see that again, I'll fucking smash it off the ground. He took it out again.
Not a butter.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, you legally can't smash the phone off the ground.
I suppose you can't.
No.
Confiscated.
Yes.
How do you be? Now it's totally acceptable.
You can't be an adult, you know, and someone go, come on, you're at work, you know you can't text. Like, but people are doing it.
All the time.
They're addicted. Fucking addicted.
Trash talking.
Mm.
On trash talking, Barry said, I was doing umpire at an under-12 match in the club. There was these two brothers playing on the visiting team. The older of the two boys was the goalkeeper and the younger lad was cornerback, probably about 9 years old. After 10 minutes into the game, the young lad went to his brother in goal and told him the corner forward is picking on him. The older brother told him to toughen up and forget about it. All was grand. About 10 minutes later, the young lad came back into his brother crying his eyes out and he asked him, hey, what's wrong? And the reply of the young lad was, and I quote, he said he's going to ride mum sideways. Under 12, though. Not nice to hear it under 12. I was trying to hide the laughter. At the time, Father Ted was popular, and I think it came from the episode where Mrs. Dial told Ted, ride me sideways was another one. The young lad didn't play in the second half, probably out of fear for his mother. It was definitely the funniest thing I heard at an underage game.
Man, there's a fella we know, and he told a neighbour of mine, it was like, I just said we're under 10 or 11, like a little blitz, and he was like, he's good now, that fella. He's good now. You want to keep an eye on him. And he was like, all right, okay, yeah. And then he was like, punch him in the back. He was like, keep punching him in the back. And the young lad was like, I don't want to. He was like, punch him in the back. And the young lad just started punching your man in the back. And your man, like, started crying. I was like, stop. And your man was like, I'm sorry, I was told to do it. And he just kept punching him in the back. There you go, a young lad doing what he's told. That's the way to do it. That was balling. And then, like, the neighbour was like nearly crying as well because he was like, I don't want to do it.
They made me do it.
The bold men made me do it. But
I was telling you, there was a relation of mine doing umpire down on Parky Cueve one day.
Oh yeah.
And he was shoving on at this stage now, and the Cork goalkeeper was giving him guff about being so slow to retrieve slitters that went over the bar or wide or whatever. And come on, Owlette, come on. All day. And then one ball went into the net and the keeper was lying on the ground and Jim said to him, I'd have saved that with my wellness. On last week's mystery topic, lady products.
Yes,
the
John.
Time of the month, John.
Wow, everyone's favourite topic. Except men.
We'll keep this short. I got a Diva cup. D-I-V-A, don't know what that is.
But it's like a moon cup.
Women out there. Okay. Got that started lockdown for the crack. It's probably, don't know how much crack it is, but I was like, actually, I'm not leaving the house. I'll give it a go. I will never look back. Honestly, I always thought they were hype and rotten. But since I started using it, I'll never look back. Change it in the morning and just before bed. That's it. Never had an issue. I noticed my cramps lessen in intensity too. Be sure to sterilize and to give it a wash with scent-free soap. Thank you, Anonymous. I definitely will.
If there's any lads still listening, Becca says, just on the Little Free Sanitary Products Initiative, for anyone that is fortunate enough to not experience period poverty, they may consider getting the item each month anyway and donating it to direct provision or their local family centre. We add in an extra shower gel, toothpaste or general everyday items into the shop and donate a care pack every couple of months. There is always a need for sanitary products in these places. That's very thoughtful, Becca, in fairness.
I don't know how you do that.
Don't know, maybe that's up to Lidl. Go on, Lidl, sort it out.
On pizza ovens, Lauren said, I have one that I got while I was living in Australia and I shipped it over with me when I moved back to Ireland And now I'm going to ship it back to Melbourne when I return in August. Jesus, it would be cheaper to buy a new one.
Like. Boom is back.
Boom is back. I love it. It's so handy. And the dough is super easy to make. We use it at least once a month. You'd want to be using it at least once a month.
I'm sure my Instagram was on fire during the week with pizza oven stuff. But, you know, obviously I haven't seen it. But who's getting the Two Johnnies podcast mug? Sponsored by KC Sports, who sell the lovely Two Johnnies merch. See twojohnnies.ie for all of that. I really like the Facebook mammy with the bull.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just
Abby?
So simple and so classic for you. Just
Orla.
Orla, there you go. Mammy in the bull. You can email podcast at twojohnnies.ie with all your details. Mara will get you hooked up. We'll get the mug out to you as soon as we can. Now, the weekly roundup, lad. Blackout time this week, boy. We're still on blackout at the moment, boy. I'm after growing an inch taller and me Mickey's now 4 foot long.
She's a trunk.
I only had it folded in half for the last one.
Man, it's been 6 days.
Yeah, it's a whole different world out there, lad.
How do you feel?
Grand. I don't really miss it. No, I haven't a fucking clue what's going on in the world. People have to text me now about, like, people dying. You know, normally you just see it on, like, Facebook. You know, because everybody's got that habit of sharing it, like, when someone dies.
Yeah, but for the couple of vital pieces of information you've lost, you've saved an incredible amount of time.
Haven't a clue about birthdays either.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, but it could be like honestly, Facebook, I don't even know my family's birthdays is.
Right, barring your family's birthday. Okay. Get them in your Google Calendar.
Yeah, I've got to do that. Other than that,
I'd say Facebook has definitely reminded you of Annie's birthday in the past.
Oh, yeah. I'll fucking get tattooed on. Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, but
that's a great idea.
I've just said there, like, oh, yeah, definitely. And now, like, she'll probably listen to this. But, yeah, it has. And I'd always be like, no, I knew about. That's why I got you a fire log for your birthday.
And a voucher. It's just been printed out.
Yeah, literally 30 seconds ago.
The ink is still wet on your birthday present. So there's some good things.
Yeah. There is some good things.
What's been the major benefit?
I just haven't been on the phone as much.
What's your screen time?
My screen time was 4 hours 40 or 4 hours 30 or something last week, right?
Yeah, this week?
It's like 2 hours 10. 2 hours 20 and it's down 58%.
You feeling better? You feeling better going around the place?
Yeah, my like today I've only been on for an hour and 25 minutes on my phone. And I've been up since 6 o'clock this morning. Dreaming about fucking cows and stuff. My most used app is now WhatsApp. Yeah. It was what was the last week? Facebook it was.
Oh yeah, you were looking at Roscoe.
Yeah, yeah, just checking out. Yeah. But like you want to have someone with you. So it's grand. I live with Annie and she's still on Instagram, so I'll get the odd bit of news. She'll be like, Ross Purcell broke her leg.
Send her a text.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? That's
she's
grand.
She's sound.
That's the way to do it. Like, so I'm getting what I need. But then I'm missing out, like, a couple of the boys, right? Oh, did you see such and such? And I had something up on Instagram. Like, sorry, boys, didn't see it.
I was too busy living in the real world.
Yeah, I'm a fucking real man. I was out climbing trees.
You weren't.
Nah, I'm joking. I was just doing less two screening and more conversations this week. I actually ended up texting people on WhatsApp. I was bored. You know, normally it's like, I fucking haven't time now to text someone back. And I was like, oh, I've got no excuse.
Yeah, because we, unknowns to ourselves, we're doing at least 2 hours a day of social media.
Yeah, so that's been nice. But I mean, I don't know if it's doable going forward from a business perspective.
Do you know what, lad? It's the time to reshape it. So from now on, why don't we say, I'm going to go on social media an hour a day. And I'm going to go on every evening at 6 o'clock. And
for an hour.
That's it. Going to reply to everybody, going to do me story, me post. And
that's it then. Yeah, I think so. Definitely reshape it. I'll honestly, not being like, you know, all airy-fairy and stuff, but like, it'll definitely change how I use social media now.
Yeah.
Because I'd be just fannying around on it. Like.
Oh, 100%. When you're eating your dinner or something.
Eat me dinner on the phone.
You spend half an hour in the jacks.
Yeah.
Jesus. I always think you're at yourself.
Oh, no, I'm not. That'll take fucking 10 seconds, lad. That'd be quicker than unlocking the phone. Pop, pop, bang. Pop, pop, bang.
Definitely. Get up out of bed in the morning now and I just turn off the alarm, check the time, and I just get up.
Yeah, I check the emails. I still check the emails.
Ah, don't mind.
I like to just know. You wouldn't know what could pop into our email box.
I know, but if you have mostly creativity to do, it's always better to do it in the morning. If you wake up and you have to be sensible on the email for 10 minutes, then you got to go try and be mad.
Knock the crack out.
It's like starting with hurling for football, you know what I mean?
Oh, don't even start that.
It's been great. I really enjoyed not being on social media. And then after dinner, I might sit down with a cup of tea, and where I'd normally be flicking on my phone, I just sit down. And as stupid as it sounds, just
if
relax.
Anyone committed house by just seeing you sitting down on your own, but they'd be worried about you nowadays.
You just relax.
I know, yeah. I don't know, like, yeah, I haven't found, like, you know, much difference in, like, I'm not zen, like, or anything, you know what I mean?
It's just, I
like,
think we are a little bit. We definitely had better conversations. Because we both had the habit of checking our phones.
Maybe. Yeah, I haven't fucking read into it much. All I know is my screen time's down, which is good for my eyes.
Yeah.
So I should be wearing my glasses all the time. So, yeah. It's been an experience.
Definitely. I'd recommend it. We kind of need it for work. If you don't need it for work, a friend of ours, I know he's listening, he said to us the other day, one day during lockdown, he was on his screen for 15 hours.
We were like, do you even fucking sleep?
Yeah. Four and a half hours was TikTok.
On TikTok.
You don't need that.
Oh my God.
Nobody needs that.
Yeah, you don't need that.
Neil's had a heart attack, yeah.
Fuck. Pop, bang.
You know what I mean? You go learn a language or something.
Oh, yeah. Time. 4.5 hours. Jesus. You want to be the king of TikTok.
Wow.
So no, he is really good in his phone.
Yeah. You just, because social media can make you, you go on, it's like, oh, there's lads with six packs in a pizza. You know?
Yeah, I've actually put on 4 stone. I'm joking.
Well, speaking of tits, you were chasing cows there before you came on here.
Oh, I'm going to save it, man, for me dirt.
Oh, okay.
I'm
going to
save it for me dirt. It's a whole, it's a long drawn out process, but I'll get to it in my dirt.
Okay.
If you haven't signed up for the Patreon podcast yet though, just sign up. It's good crack. There's 58 podcasts. We're doing a live stream.
Oh,
by the time you listen to this, we'll have done a live stream.
And I bet you it was class.
Yeah. Also, by the time you listen to this, we'll have been on 2FM. So there's no point talking about it. We'll talk about it next week.
That either went really well or we're cancelled.
Yeah.
You know yourself.
It'll be interesting to see. But I got way too in depth this week on the Patreon podcast talking about my toilet habits during 30 Seconds of Truth.
Thank you, Chair.
So let's say, right?
You're squatting.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I can see you.
So you would go like that.
Yeah, from the bottom up.
Yeah.
Yeah? You put your hand back through your legs. He puts his hand back between his legs and scoops forward.
Right.
Man.
Yeah. Women would never do that.
I swear to God, I've been doing that, like, all my life.
How does it go for you?
It's grand. It'd be clean as a whistle. You know, I'm particular, like.
No doubt. You're a particular man.
But I've tried it the other way. I just can't do it. Okay, our guest this week is someone who commuted from college in Canada every week to turn out for the Clare hurling team. He also has an all-star and cycled across Canada to raise over $1 million for cancer services and care. Welcome to the Two Johnnies podcast, Mr. Tony Griffin.
Okay, so we are now recording. So if you were going to cut the back off Gerlach Nan or John Lahey, anyone like that, Just know it's on file from now on. Is that all right, Tony?
I'd love looking at it to know what I really think of it.
Yeah. Well, do you know, I feel like the floor is yours, man. Don't miss this opportunity.
There's zero censorship on this podcast,
people,
Tony.
Want to know, what was Gerlach Nan really like?
Ger was great to me. Like, Ger brought me in when I was 18. I was from a junior club. You were talking about junior clubs earlier.
Whoa.
Like, we had a good goalie who was now actually living in South Tip in Clonmel. And he was a brilliant
number
goalie.
For him.
Oh yeah, great guy. Guy called Shane O'Neill. I said to him, I'll make him famous. He said, what if I don't want to be famous? Look, he had the biggest puck out in Clare, and he was probably the best at talking dirty that you've ever met. Like, he'd be shouting at the opposition supporters in the stand from goals. He had a wicked 21 yard free. Like, I mean, goalies just like almost got the flag and waved at themselves before it was taken. So I could score frees, and he could score 21-yard frees and put them in the net. So, look, now brought me on and gave me a chance. It was his last year, and he nearly killed us the same year. We're playing Tip, he beat us, and it's probably because half the lads were a stone lighter than, like, Lohan looked like he was 14. And Sean McMahon had no shoulders because he trained us so hard. But it was my first year, and it was an eye-opener to being from a junior club to going in and playing with, you know, I still had their... The lads is like Lohan and Dale. I still had those guys' posters on my wall, and here I was marking them and trying to.
Yeah.
But
what year was that now?
2000.
And was the training? It's like, was it seriously old school now? Like, people make out.
Yeah, like, in fairness, I was 6'2" and I was like 11 stone. So it was like, if
Jesus.
I turned sideways, you couldn't see me. You know, I disappeared if I sat as good sideways.
But if you were playing with Limerick now, you'd actually be 22 stone. Like. Yeah. You're like a fucking prop forward.
Exactly. Yeah, with ties like John Longo. Yeah. But I remember looking at and saying to me once, geez, you want to put a bit of weight on, you might try eating a second dinner. You know, so that's
science.
I used to go to the West County Hotel and watch all these Russian lads bench pressing 200 kg, you know, so I just started copying them. I got to know them all. And I saw, like, I had a chest on me like fucking Sylvester Stallone, but spindly little arms. Because all I was doing was bench pressing, trying to get big.
No such thing as strength and conditioning back then, I take it.
No, that wasn't even a like, look, Nan approached that game against Tip with, okay, it worked in 95, it worked in 97. I run these guys to within an inch of their lives so that Tip won't stay with them. But I think it was like, you know, the general's last being paraded out for war. He went too far and we were so overtrained. I got jersey number 23 and I was just delighted to be on the bus as a young fella from a junior club. But I remember when I made my debut in 2002, it was in Park Aquive against Tip, actually. And I was centre forward. And like half the county thought it was a mistake because I was with an intermediate club at that stage. But I remember I had a great game, scored 6 points from play. It was one of those days, everything just fell on my lap. And I was marking David Kennedy. And I remember afterwards, like, Nan texted me, said, will you come out to see me? No longer manager-like. So 3 evenings later, I went out to his house and the wife made us a cup of tea and we just sat there. And he basically just told me what was going to happen next, where I needed to improve my game, even though he was no longer manager. And it always stuck with me, you know, because he was looking out for me and saying, like, this is what next year is going to be like. And in 3 years' time, you need to be scoring 1-2 a game and so on and so forth.
That was a nice touch for a
fellow who wasn't involved anymore. She's mad, like, he's absolutely insane.
So, like that, people might know you as a Clare hurler, all-star winner, all that kind of stuff. But we want to hear about your new book. You've written a book about teenagers, kind of two teenagers. So, Tony, where did this come out of?
It's a good question. As a teenager, I was, you know, I loved a bit of crack in that, but I was probably, the only place I felt confident or comfortable was actually on a hurling pitch. Off it, I felt weak. I hated the look of myself, like a lot of teenagers do. But in my 20s, the easiest way to say how the book came about was when my father died when I was living in Canada, and I was commuting back to play with Clare every 3 weeks from university in Canada. And when he died, like, it really took me by surprise. I ended up going through a period of depression, didn't say anything to anyone, and then had a breakdown in 2008. So, like, the week before going out to play Waterford in the Munster Championship, I was having a panic attack in the dressing rooms of Gaelic Grounds, just so no one would see it, like, going into the bathroom to have a panic attack. But I didn't even know what they were. You know, I'd never met anyone with depression, at least no one talked about it. So when I kind of pieced myself back together then, I heard about Jim Steins and his work in Melbourne with teenagers through his documentary, and went down to Melbourne with another fellow and said, look, can we just study what you're doing? Jim was dying at the time, and they said, do you want to meet Jim? We said, no, we just want to study what REACH, the foundation, does. And when I saw what they did with teenagers, I was here, look, man, if we had this, I'd have another 4 All-Stars if I had this. I was probably lucky to get the one.
Yeah.
Because it was all about instilling a bit of a sense of confidence, a sense of self-awareness, so that, like, you can have the crack and you can also have the conversations with your mates when you know they need to have them. So we brought that back to Ireland. We called it SOAR, as in to take off. And I spent 10 years going in and out of schools just listening, 50,000 teenagers, just listening, asking them, how do I connect with you so that we can have a real honest conversation? And, you know, I went all over the world sourcing everything from acting coaches to psychologists to train us to do this. And then when the pandemic hit, someone said, you should put that in a book. And I said, no, that's like an old phase of my life. I'm not interested in that anymore. And then a fella from Clare asked me, would you write a quote for teenagers? And I said, I don't want to do that. They're sick of quotes from adults. But our son was like 4 weeks old and he had bad colic. So I used to be driving him around close to where I live in the Wicklow Mountains, just driving him, trying to get him to sleep. And this one evening, a quote came to me. It was like it was painted on the windscreen. It was like, the most important relationship you'll ever have is with yourself. All the others are secondary. And I said, that's what the book should be about. It's about not being afraid. It's about being braver. And so then over the next 9 weeks, lads, the book basically tumbled out. And 9 weeks later, I said, there it is. And we call it The Teenager's Book of Life. I partnered with a brilliant kind of illustrator artist. And now it's like going all over the world. People all over the world are reading it. So it's kind of amazed me.
What were the the main issues you saw, the big issues facing teenagers?
Well, like, it's a funny stage of life. Is a lot of us forget it quickly because it's either great crack or we don't remember much of it or it was painful, but we move on. The issues mostly that I would have seen, Johnny, is like everything from just not being comfortable in themselves, or probably the best way to explain it is to explain what SOAR did. We'd go in and we'd train people in their 20s to create the most honest conversation, like the conversation you'd have with your best mate, maybe, but you'd never have it with the rest of your class. We would create an environment where that would happen. You'd have lads coming out, you know, standing up and say, the thing that you don't know about me is this. You'd have people, big rugby lads, bawling their eyes out because they missed their granddad because he's the one fella who he could talk to. And everything in between. Girls standing up because they're self-harming, or you name it. I remember one workshop.
She's Tony. Yeah. How do you create that environment?
It looks straightforward when you're a teenager. It just feels like it's happening. But we would have done a lot of work with Reach to understand everything from, you know, the hero's journey, Star Wars. Like, that's the hero's journey story. It has an arc. So we would have understood that. The facilitators would embody what we're hoping to create. So at the start, I'd stand up and I'd say, look, this is who people think I am. But the reality is, you know, I've had a breakdown. I didn't want to be here. And all of a sudden, they're like, whoa, okay, that's honest. And that's what they're looking for. Yeah. I think at that age is to really talk honestly about life, because they think a lot of the adults are pretending, and they're right. So all types of issues, man, everything you can think of, everything.
Do you think, like, obviously things are a lot different than when we were all teenagers? I mean, like, I have a teenage sister, she's 15. I know the crack that's going on at the moment. I mean, there seems to be a lot of pressure on teenagers to fit in, or like, you know, well, they have a phone, so I should have a phone. They're on social media, so I should have social media. Like, obviously, social media, as we all know, can be great, but it can also be a nightmare. Do you think that's massively affecting teenagers in Ireland?
Like, when I was 15, I used to go to this disco, and I used to get the shit kicked out of me every Thursday night, because it was like the lads from the neighbouring club held this disco in their hall. Like, and I'd walk in, and we might have played them the week before, and all of a sudden I go home, another chipped tooth. But like, back then, if you loved the gob, no one saw it. Like, whereas imagine now.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a different world, because the stakes are higher, and how you look is more important. It kind of mattered back then, but now it's like, it's everything. Because like, if you don't look like someone on Instagram that you follow, who spent a lot of money curating the photo shoot to look a certain way, then you can look at your own life and say, well, my life doesn't add up. It's not enough. And that is a challenge. Us three, probably, you're younger than me, but us three definitely didn't have to contend with it.
Oh, no, man. When we were going to teenage discos, you could be shifting all kinds of rough yokes. You get away, do you know what I mean? No one say nothing about it.
I know.
The problem is now when you do something, or, you know, like, we've all fucking done stupid things when we're teenagers, or we've all, like, you know, fucking probably had someone who was a bit mean to us, but like that used to be like in school, and then you go home at 3 o'clock. Yeah. Now it's fucking constant. It's round the clock.
Now it follows you around, but like that's for sure. Yeah, and like I think there's a lot. Like, depends how far down the rabbit hole you want to go. There's a lot of stuff that's happening. Like, you'll see now how it's clear now that a lot of parents aren't coping. You know, they're finding life difficult emotionally, mentally, and so it's not just our teenagers. But I think this is the first time in history of our country, anyways, where we're talking about it. So we just realize a lot of the problems that used to be hidden or pushed under the carpet or drank away or whatever, they're up for grabs now. And, you know, it's in some ways, I think it's a good thing. It has to happen.
Do you think that's because of lockdown that it's been brought to the fore, or just in movement in general?
I think both. I think it was coming. Like, when I think about going into schools, and we started in 2012, you know, by the time I was kind of finishing my tour of duty, and I was almost like in bits after 9 years of it in 2019, like even the young fellas were so much more emotionally intelligent. I'd go in thinking that they were a certain way, and then they'd have conversations. I'd be like, oh, geez, you guys are very open, aren't you? And they'd be talking.
And you could see that even over the course of 9 years.
Yeah,
you could see that change.
Definitely. Just an evolution in how open people are, how they have language, like emojis, for example. Even that, being able to name your emotions, that's a change from 10 years ago. So it's moved on. And that's what kind of why the book, I think, has hit a core, because I'm not an expert. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a teacher. But I said I'd write as honestly as I could about all of it. And then somehow that's just hit a chord. And parents are picking it up and reading it and going, geez, maybe I should talk to my 14-year-old like that. Maybe they'd actually be able for it. And the 14-year-old's reading it saying, Jesus, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one that's going through this.
Yeah. I think that's a massive thing from like parents now. Like, I think in our day it used to be just shout at them loud enough, yeah, and they'll just fucking, they'll, you know, it'll just click with them one of these days. It'll just, whereas now it's kind of like, you're as well off, like, you know, I'd be saying to my mother, like, you know, there's no point losing the head if she did, like, yeah, you're as well off just sit her down, like, and now, and I think that's nearly the handiest part. I mean, you'd nearly be just treating them like your friends now, to be honest, like teenagers. Like.
In a way, you're bang on, man, because, like, I think about my father, like, Jesus, he was a fantastic man, but, like, I can't ever remember a conversation where he put the arm around me and said, look, this is what you need to expect. Now, you're starting to go with girls, they're going to wreck your head. But this is what you need to do, like. And when you get married, then it's a whole other, like, never.
Yeah.
Whereas now,
come back to me in 15 years when you're married. I'll explain to you again.
Yeah, exactly. I've learned so much. I'm very experienced. I've 7 children. I'll tell you how hard that is. Yeah. I don't know.
What are the big pieces of advice you could give to young people or the parents listening to this?
Just buy the book. Not all original.
buy the book and read it and find out for yourself.
Yeah, it's my retirement. No, I'm always slow about giving advice because, like, I'm giving advice based on my life experience. But one of the things I did want to get through with the book was, you know what? It's going to be okay. Whatever you're going through, it will be okay. Things have a way of working themselves out. Like, to parents, I always say, I have so many parents ring me and say, look, Johnny's 14. My wife and myself are going through a divorce, you know, or my husband and myself are going through a divorce. He's getting angry, what do I do? Or he's in his room more. And I said, well, that's kind of normal. Like, that's just trust him. Like, to trust your teenager that they're wiser than you realize is one I would definitely say for parents. Just look at them and say, actually, he's much more able than I give him credit for. So I'm going to let him kind of find his way a bit. But I'll be the sides of the pinball machine if he starts to struggle. I'll be here if he needs me. But you know what? I think he's going to be okay. That goes a long way. They'll feel that off you. And they'll know that you're kind of trusting them. And then the other one for parents is, like, don't hide your humanity. Like, don't pretend you've got it all sorted out. They'll respect you more and they'll connect with you more if you are allowed to let them see that, you know what, you struggle as well, or sometimes you don't have all the answers. And so that's maybe two for parents is trust them and allow them to see that you are also trying to figure this out. Because they'll be more empathetic than you realise. And then for teenagers, it's just, Jesus, have as much crack as you can. Because...
yeah, you'll be miserable long enough.
You know, like,
I mean, do you think, Tony, like, if teenagers are able to, like, you know, get this help and really improve and feel more comfortable in their own skin, that we're going to stop problems down the line when they become adults? Because, like, I think a lot of us can probably say, like, me and Johnny have definitely, but we've been through counselling, like, and we've no bother saying that, like, but, like, the thing is, like, people look back on being a teenager and they're like, it was great crack, and then when they actually look back on it, like, properly, they'll go, that was fucking shit enough, like, I probably was going through stuff and didn't even know it, and maybe if I got the help then, I wouldn't be where I am now.
It has such an effect on you, it really shapes you,
doesn't
it?
Yeah, does. Do you think it's important that they can get, you know, get that help at a young age?
Yeah, it's essential because realistically, every other area of life, in terms of, if you look at surgery, for example, medicine, surgery, you go looking at what it was like 200 years ago, it's like, geez, like an abattoir in West Clare or like in Canalty or somewhere, you know, what
training with Jerloch Nan.
Yeah, exactly. The Hidden Shannon or Crusheen with Jerloch Nan 2000. That's what surgery was like 200 years ago. Whereas, you know, look at surgery, you know, it's robotics. Things are happening which are like sci-fi. Now you look at education, and I love teachers because I think it's one of the hardest jobs in the world. But 200 years ago and today, it hasn't changed that much. It's probably the only discipline that hasn't. Now, that's open to some debate, but really the method, we have the knowledge, we give it to you, you sit the exam, you're ready for life. That hasn't changed. Whereas the research, if you were to look at the research, 75% of mental health issues arise from 16 onwards, you know, 16 to 25, that's when they arise. Because at that stage of our life, we're very vulnerable, we don't have an adult identity yet, we maybe don't have a lot of ways of coping with what we're going through, we don't have the strategies, like we don't have the playbook yet. And so I couldn't agree with you more. That's where I'm hoping, at least, the book can help parents and teenagers earlier to make sense of this. Because really, it's just making sense of life. That's what the book is doing for people. And there's lots of other ways of doing it, but it's definitely needed earlier.
Do you think that, like, you know, what you're doing with your foundation stuff, do you think similar stuff like that could be incorporated into schools more? Like, yeah. You know, I mean...
Into the actual curriculum.
Because when I was in TY, like, you know, we went away to Ballybunion and some guy came in and told a story and I remember being like, fucking hell, I never heard anybody, you know, talk like that before. And, like, it was during transition year that I kind of felt like, oh, well, I don't have to try and just fucking impress everyone else, you know, in school. I can just be myself now and it's grand, you know. And I took that from transition year. But a lot of lads I know just went, like, oh, I want to go to school as quick as I can.
Yeah.
And now, like... You know, I they're probably struggling a little bit, like even friends of mine, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, like the thing about the teenage years is they're the ones where we're usually most, in some ways, like we have that, like, we're so excited by life, we're kind of courageous, we'll try shit. Whereas that is the time where if we harness that, we'd have those skills for life. We'd have a zest for life. Mm. So, you know, the schools, I meet so many teachers and they're brilliant, but it's difficult because if you're trying to change the school system, it's like trying to turn an ocean liner with a toothpick. You know, it's tough going. So things like transition year are brilliant. That's why I saw focuses on that year, is because you do things which are about who you are, who you want to be, not what number of points you want to get. It's like, who are you and where are you going? Mm. Like, what makes you tick? How are you different and unique to every human being of all the 7 billion? And like... then you start to talk about things where you realize, geez, I'm not the only one that goes home and like maybe the odd night cries myself to sleep and does something else to myself to sleep as well. I'm not the only one that does that. Jesus, there's other people like me. They have the same issues as me. Wow. And you feel much less like you're on your own then. And then you're much more, you feel much more belonging. Like, lads, the thing I learned probably most from SOAR is, and from meeting those 50,000 teenagers, is our drive for a sense of identity and belonging is really important to who we are. And if we can start to understand it earlier in life, we'll make better choices then in our 20s and 30s. And and we'll get to where we want to get with less pain along the way.
Yeah. That's beautiful, man.
Yeah, I know. I fucking listen to this all day.
And you know, and in general, we hate clear people. I'm only joking.
Well, one thing broke my heart in the 99 Munster minor final. You hammered us.
Great.
That'll make us sleep tonight, Tony. I'll tell you, think of that. Going to bed happy.
No, I'm only joking. Man, I read your book when it came out. Was it 2010? Was it?
Yeah.
So, just for people who don't know, you were playing for Clare.
Mm.
And talk about commuting. You were living in fucking Canada.
Yeah.
So, what was your schedule? How did you train? How often did you come home?
How it came about was our team doctor at the time, a guy called Travis McDonough, was Canadian, and he was the first person, and this is no word of a lie, he was the first person in my life. He came in to do a nutrition talk, actually in 2000, looking at hands last year, and the way he spoke, I said, I have to talk to that fella after. So I hung around like a nerd and I said, when you were talking about that, we talked for an hour in the standing up about how could I get better. I said, look, I'm tall and skinny, look at me, I'm like a Kenyan runner, how do I get stronger? And he was the first guy that was actually able to tell me. So we became great friends. And I was a medical rep, like 2002, we lost to Kenny in the Ireland final. I got a job as a medical rep. So I'm going around with my big fancy car, I had my phone, I thought it was great. I had one album, Strokes. I listened to it over and over again, going around with my I thought it was the man, like, you know. But over on 2 years, I started to realize, this can't be the rest of my life, going around to doctors, like in GP. And Tipperary, I know Tipperary inside out because it was part of the county. It was one of my counties, so I knew it inside out. And I just knew I had to move on. One day I was driving to a GP to tell him about whatever we were selling, and I just realised there was tears streaming down my face. And I was like, Jesus, what's this? And I realised, I hate this job, but I have to change. So I rang Travis, this fella, and I said, Travis, what will I do? Like, and he said, go to university in another country. And said, no, that's impossible. I'm playing hurling. I just broken onto the team, man. I can't do that. So he challenged me to email these three universities. And one got back to me and said, we'd accept you into our sports science program. And that was the university he'd went to. And I chose the program he studied without knowing he had studied it. You know, so it's pure fate. So I ended up going over there. Anthony Daly was manager. He's very understanding. He's, you know, he's the type of guy, let's make it work. So I'd commute back every 3 weeks for league games during the season. And I trained out there. I trained more there than I trained at home, but trained differently. So you know, I worked at a biomechanics lecture to study my strike, to film it, to see could I get more length in it. I trained with a UFC guy, which meant basically he kicked the shit out of me, but it was good.
Like being back at the disc golf.
Exactly. It was all very familiar to me. And I got the chance to do training that I wouldn't have had here. And I ended up doing a bit of sports psychology there that I'd never been exposed to here. So it was a great, great experience. Plus, I got out of Clare. And at the time, I needed to do that for me, you know, because over there, no one cared about hurling. I was just another person.
In terms of hurling skills, like, you're trying to play all-star level and you've nobody in the entire country who can hit the ball back to you in Canada. How does this, are you just up against the wall?
Up against people would see me run down the street in Halifax, which is a lovely city. It's very Irish. They love their Celtic music, like Nova Scotia is the area in New Scotland. They're full of Celts and Irish. And I'd run down the road with hurley, like snow everywhere, and I'd see these old women seeing me coming and they'd almost be climbing over the snowbank to get away from me.
This guy's wielding a fucking axe.
Yeah, exactly. So, but they were great years because I just got to experiment. Now, obviously, when Daddy died, I came home and trained full time that year. And that was the year that I won the All-Star. And I put it down to the fact that, you know, I was sleeping in the afternoon. I was training in as many ways as I could. I was training myself on my weaknesses so that, you know, you go to Mark Tommy Walsh, he's the best fielder of the ball in the country. How do you stop him fielding it, but send the ball in the direction you want to go? Little things like that. I had time.
So, Tony, for people who don't know, when you came home from Canada, you didn't work. You became probably the first full-time GA player ever.
Yeah, and I remember Liam Griffin, the Western manager, who I ended up becoming friends with, wrote an article about how it was dangerous for the game. And what he actually meant was it was dangerous for the counties because if I could start to fulfill more of my potential. But I read it wrongly. I thought he said this shouldn't happen. So I wrote him. I said, Liam, I'm very disappointed. Like, I need your support. People are getting on to me saying I shouldn't do this. So, yeah, I just said to myself, what if I give myself one season where rather than have 50 things on the go, I just focus on this one thing and did it as well as I could. And, like, I'm so grateful it happened. Now, I was at home, living back at home, and it was difficult because Daddy had just died. But at the same time, it wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for him passing, really.
But it's a big risk to do it, to put your career, your education on hold. And what if it's okay, you went out and won an All-Star, so everyone can say, wow, that really paid off. But if you went out and had got an injury or had played badly, it would all have been a waste. And obviously, for the year you're full-time hurling, you're not making a penny.
I know. And like, I had a nice life in Halifax. I enjoyed it, you know. Yeah. I think like, I met a Canadian girl, like Travis, that fella, said to me one day, he had a practice in Ennis, and he said, I want you to introduce you to this new girl that's come to work for me. So we ended up going out, and that was kind of, you know,
he's after getting you a course, he's after getting you a ride.
Have you number for that fella? Jesus Christ,
he should be giving the fucking talk. Can we get Travis to write your book?
Oh, yeah, exactly. He's a great guy. And, you know, he's really interesting because he went back to Canada and he set up a tech company all around sport. So every NBA team, every NHL team, every NFL team uses the technology he created.
Okay. Wow.
So he's a special guy. We've stayed great friends. So that year, there was some risk involved because we were beaten by Cork in the first round in Thurles. And I remember thinking, geez, have I made a mistake here? Like, have I put everything, if I betted everything on this, and it's not worked out. But, you know, we ended up getting to the Ireland semi-final because Kenny beat us. But we went in a good run after that. And, you know, in hindsight, it was good because I was at home. You know, there was probably a bit of support needed at home. And it was a good, like, break in everything. So even if it wasn't successful outwardly, for me, it was a great challenge. Like, there were days on my own, like, I'd jog into Ennis, which was 5 miles from where we lived, at night, just because my head was all over the place, you know, maybe a few weeks after the funeral. So it was a good outlet for a lot of the grief, I suppose.
Man, I don't know if you noticed, me and Johnny done a charity cycle. We once cycled from a dare to care. Now, we don't want to be flexing because you cycled 7,000 kilometres, right, which is the Tour de France twice for charity. I mean, how, everybody likes to throw a few bob to charity. But how does that enter your head and be like, right, that's what I'm going to do. That's the idea I have, and I'm going to go through it. Because that must have taken some mental toughness, let alone you must have some pain in your arse from cycling.
I had an awful pain in the arse. Yeah. Jeez. And I had a massive arse after it. I tidied at Lars when I started out. But how it happened was, the year after the All-Star, I went back to college, and I was over there. And one evening I was at home, my own. I lived with two lads. I swear to God, if you had them on, you'd have pain in your tummy laughing at them. So there were two characters, but they were out on the piss one night, and I just couldn't face them. And then this documentary came on about Terry Fox. I don't know. Have you ever heard of Terry Fox?
Yeah. Terry Fox run. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So for those that haven't, he had cancer. He lost his leg. I think he was 23 from the knee down. And he decided to run across Canada. So every night he'd have to stop, and his wounds on his amputated leg would be bleeding so much he'd have to bandage it, run the next day. And he got, I think, 23 days into it, ran almost across Canada, and then the cancer spread and he had to stop, and he died soon afterwards. So I saw this documentary and I said, geez, imagine doing that. And I said, no, you're 6'3", you'd never make it. So I said, what's the next best thing? I said, imagine, because I was big into cycling at the time. I went to watch the Tour de France, and I said, imagine cycling it. And then it just, the idea wouldn't go away. And I found a great trainer in the university, and he said, look, I'll have to rebuild your body and take any strength you have from upper body into your arse. So I said, fair enough. And then, 7,000 kilometers. So it was quite the ride.
But it must have completely changed your body. Like, you went back trying to play GAA.
Yeah.
After the cycle, like I said, you must have been a different man.
Big arses are nearly forbidden in GAA, Tony. You know, for fellas, it's like, that's a bad thing.
Yeah, there hasn't been one of those since, like, I don't know. Who would it be?
Well, you should see me playing junior hurling, Tony, to be honest. Beyonce. That's what they call me.
J-Lo. No.
J-Lo on fire.
It must have been hard to come back, though, was it?
Well, there's a few ways it was hard to come back. Firstly, I went back and tried to play that season, and I kept tearing a hamstring. So, you know, the last 3 years playing with Clare, 2009, 2010. 2008, I was going through the breakdown. You know, the cycle just kind of allowed me to push the grief to the side. I didn't have to deal with it. I was doing something, you know, that was supposed to be heroic. Everyone wants to talk about themselves and their cancer, so I didn't have to talk about myself and what the reason I was doing it. So that caught up with me. Like, the grief caught up with me heavy that year, 2008. That's when things, the wheels come off the bike. But physically, trying to play hurling, my body had changed so much, and I had been through such a, you know, you say 7,000 kilometers, but that's 150 kilometers every day for 49 days. Like, the discipline it took, it almost like exhausted me. So for the last 2 years playing with Clare, I didn't have a lot of appetite because I was just mentally and physically exhausted. And as a management setup, we were all over the place, and I knew we weren't going to be successful. So I spent the last 2 years mostly trying to overcome injury to play, really. And they weren't the most enjoyable years, but that's life, I suppose.
You talked about the cycling and the amazing effect it had on people and the people who helped you. I just wanted to ask you about Lance Armstrong, who was such a great help to you, I think it's fair to say. And how things have panned out since, what's your thoughts on the whole situation?
Well, I said to you in the email before this, I can't talk about Lance.
Oh, I didn't get that, sorry.
There you go.
I'm only joking.
He doesn't read emails.
It's a funny thing, I only thought about him this morning because when we were trying to get the cycle off the ground, I had no bikes.
You're going to have train.
Yeah, exactly. I used to go out train in a pair of socks because Nova Scotia's freezing in the winter. I used to go out train in a pair of socks around my hands, like woolly Aran socks, a pair of tracksuit trousers, like three pairs of GA shorts.
She's clear, lads are rough.
I know. No style back then. But anyways, I met this guy at a party, and he was saying to me, I heard you're doing this cycle, he's a bit older, and I said, yeah, and he goes, who are you giving the money to? And I said, I'd love to give it to Livestrong. He said, you know what, I had a cigar last week with this guy who knows Lance Armstrong. So, long story short, he got me to meet Lance down in Texas, and went to his house in Austin and spent the day with him. And I really got to know him well, and he was massively supportive. Like, he got Trek to give me two bikes like that, and up to then Trek wouldn't return any of our calls.
Wow.
And then obviously it all came out, but look, that's life. But I've been to Austin to visit him a few times since then, but it was since everything broke, like, well, we've went in different directions. I wouldn't say we're pally, but at that stage in our lives, he was brilliant. But look, we give Livestrong a $250,000 that we raised, so
it's unbelievable.
It's all good.
Yeah, yeah, it's unreal.
Okay, are Clare going to win the All-Ireland?
Jesus, now you have me.
Or who's going to win it?
I'd love to see Clare win. Obviously, Tony Kelly's from my own club. I love watching him. I don't know how Clare are going to win it this year, but maybe in the next few years. Yeah. It's kind of hard to see past Limerick at the moment. But
yeah, as much as it sickens
us. Hopefully
they
don't do a Dublin on it.
Yeah.
Are Tip going to win it, do you think?
Well, like, we'd be given the old propaganda saying, no, Tip, should not even train it now, Tony, you know what I mean? Like, Tip,
building for the future.
Yeah, don't put any money on Tip, you know?
I'd love to see him win it, but as you said there, I hope Limerick don't do a Dublin and you know, or we'll all end up, like, hating them even more if that's possible.
Yeah, I know, we're all trying to catch up on them, but look, Galway will be there as well, and... Yeah. Actually, we're mad to see a bit
of
hurling and football going on again, aren't we?
That's it. I don't care who wins. Once I can watch it and once we can go down the clubhouse and poke around with the boys, I don't give a shite. That's all we want. Yeah, 100%.
Jeez, if I'm ever down your way, we must go for a few pucks. I'd like to see what you're like.
Definitely. We're not tasty. Tasty and industrious.
Yes, yeah. I like it. I like it. What a combo.
And I would also say lazy on my own behalf, but tasty, you know. And don't forget, Tony's new book, The Teenager's Book of Life, is available from bookshops and online now. Horsa Dinchy. Last time he won a South Championship, he woke up in Rossmoke with a Padre of Pio statue handcuffed to his ankle and a naked Eddie Hobbs standing over him with a shotgun saying, "Where's the trout?" It's time for Noel Furlong and it's time for Noel's News.
Noel's News!
My young fella.
Well, Noel.
I tell you, Cameron wasn't too impressed at my funeral antics last week.
Well.
I went into Aldergate, ended up getting stuck to a bar. Fucking 5 minute job. I can get out of it for about 2 days.
Any word from them, though?
No word from them. I said I let things settle down.
See how it goes.
You know, cause I came home out of it and Cameron said, "I suppose you didn't get paid either." I said, "Look, there was a woman after dying."
Have a bit of respect.
Have a bit of respect. I had to pay my respect. She said, "Noel, you didn't even know her." I said, "Look, it's not all about who you know, Karma." Just because I'm now one of them, a mocha man.
A what?
You know what to be at?
Who?
Drinking cafe au lait and walking around with a jumper around their neck. You know, small men in big cars talking about... fucking whatever, golf and all these lads around town, you know.
Are you on about like mocha as in like mocha, like the coffee?
Drinking, yeah. I'm not a mocha man, you know what I mean? I don't speak Americano. Maybe I'm not cool anymore.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Just, you know what I mean? I've been to Capa White and Capa Moore, never been to Cappuccino. Right? I was inside O'Connor's one day in the shop and I heard a woman shouting at me, "Flat white." I said, "Look, I'm not getting into racism with you now." I haven't time. I just want a cup of tea. Them rich lads, all outside the cafe. They'll all be outside Starbucks below.
Starbucks.
Yeah. Do you know Paddy Hollywood?
No.
Where's the sunglasses? And Johnny Jag. You know Johnny heard the Jaguar?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Them two fucking sponge cakes be sitting around outside drinking coffee.
Sponge cake?
Nothing to be doing. I was there, we passed Monday, and he said to me, asked me if I like skiing.
Skiing?
I said, "Who, you're skiing?" In the car. I said, "Grand, yeah." He's some man in the calculator. You want to see Jersey skiing typing by? There used to be numbers coming out everywhere. Huh? I said, "I didn't see much of them since he got the knee done." But they were laughing then. Now, I didn't know if they were laughing with me or laughing against me.
Yeah.
But someone backed the trailer into the Jaguar that day anyway. See, last week when I got caught up in the session, but I was supposed to go for a walk with the grandchildren.
Okay.
Up the mountain. So I'm gone beyond that. I took them to the field and we hurled away anyway.
Yeah, that's nice.
I didn't want the grandchildren rat me out. Little Billy. Little Billy says, "Granddaddy took us to the field, Nanny." I said, shut up, you fucking snitch. And then Cameron's like, oh, why didn't you go up the mountain like they asked? I said, it was gone.
The mountain?
Yeah, it was gone. She said, where was it gone? Where'd it go? I said, erosion. It's a motherfucker. You'd be safer down the field. Huh?
Yeah.
Anyway. Look. I had a quiet news week, so okay. I'm going to bring him back to quiz.
Oh, yes! Okay? Come on!
Now, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first.
Okay, well...
Okay, I'll go second.
First, okay. No. Hedge Martin. You know the hedge.
The hedge Martin?
Yeah, the big head of hair. You know. Sure, all the Martins are the same with the hair.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You know him. Well, his daughter, Megan, anyway.
Right.
Megan Martin. She have a new jockey. A new bull. A new pilot. Okay. A saddle merchant. Okay. New cowboy in town. She's wifing, right?
Yeah, okay. I got but that.
The question is, where she's having sex with this lad anyway, right? Where is the new boyfriend from?
Okay.
Is it A, France? B, Drangen? C, Iraq, or D, Clonmel. There's no good answer.
I'd say it's
really.
I'd say Clonmel.
It's not Clonmel. It's France.
Okay, it's French. Wow.
Yeah, would you believe it? Yeah. I know, typical shithousery from the Martins again. But anyway, Maureen, over to you.
Okay.
Your first question. How did I know Hedge Martin's daughter's new fella was from France? Was it A, he tried to shift me? B, he'd no socks on? C, he was on a bicycle? Or D, he spoke with a thick French accent?
I'm guessing D.
Wasn't D? I didn't actually get talking to him at all.
Okay.
Well, I was only borrowing a sprayer from Martin, but I didn't see him. But it was B. He was wearing some sort of loafer shoe, and there was no sign of a sock.
Okay.
So I mean,
it's normal.
You don't have to be Sherlock Jones. You know what I mean? Right? As Dolly Parton used to sing, "If you don't know, now you know."
I think that was so, Dolly Parton. Nigel.
Yeah. Now, back to you, Johnny Stacks.
Mm.
Kit Kat Walsh. He does nothing. Every time you look at him, he's taking a break.
Brilliant. Right. Yeah.
The question is, what happened to his sprayer? Was it A, his dog Deirdre ate it? B, it blew away? C, a mystery for the ages? Or D, I have it?
I'd say D, you have it.
Very perceptive of you, Sherlock Jones. But I couldn't find Hedges one.
Oh, you do have it?
Yeah, of course. But and I didn't want to go over to talking to Jean-Claude or whatever his name is. So I used to think Kit Kat had a twin.
Yeah.
That's where he got the name.
Because there was two of them.
Yeah, but it turns out your man is a, what do they call it, a Google miser, is it?
Huh?
Do you know, like, when someone is the head off him, but no relation?
A doppelganger.
Doppelganger.
Yeah. Sorry, what did they say?
A Google miser.
That's a beer, isn't it?
I don't fucking know what
it is. I wouldn't be able to speed in all them craft beers.
No.
Dirty Otters and fucking Sexy Badger Stout. Paddy Hedgehog's Rocket Cider. All that stuff. I wouldn't be thinking that. As Chris de Burgh used to sing, you'd be as well have to check yourself so you don't wreck yourself. Do you know?
Which Chris de Burgh song is that?
I don't know. An old one. As a fact. Maureen, back to you.
Okay.
Johnny Stacks is going to pint up now.
I know.
Scania Barry. A.K.A. Barry Burke, the King of the Road. Why did they call him the King of the Road? Because he never leaves the fucking yard, right? he washes their trucks, you know, but that's not the question. The question is, Maureen, why did Barry go to Banshee? Was it A, Barry was getting bacon from Brendan the Butcher in Banshee? Was it B, Barry was getting bread from Billy the Baker in Banshee? Was it C, Barry was getting a beach bench from Big Bob and and the beach block by doing the,
the beach block
doing the timber? Or was it D, a court order?
I'll go with C, no.
I'd say go with D, Maureen.
It's too late to change my answer. Can I go with D?
I'm not telling you your business now. I'll be going with D now, if it's me.
Okay, I'll go with D.
Twas D. Well spotted, yes. Maureen. He was caught stealing horseshite and selling it in the brown market. So he was sentenced to 2 weeks in Bancher.
Okay. Well, that is punishment.
Yeah. Now, they don't have a jail there, Anthony. You just had to live there for 2 weeks. Scan you very well. He's no Paddy Fong, I'll tell you that. No. Paddy Fong is the real king of the road.
Yeah.
Loves driving. You know, he drove for Dan for a while and Dan had the band on the road.
Yeah.
He's loved Kilkenny. They thought Dan was real exotic up there, you know. They wouldn't have acted like him up there. And as Dan used to say about Kilkenny, the town I rode so well. This is Dan Brown line. Dan Bryan, you know what I mean? More cracked than a plumber's arse. That's what I know. I went up with him one night. I was doing security. And this haunty one comes up to me and she said, you know, are you in the crew? And I said, how are you doing?
How are you doing?
You know, I had the leather jacket on.
Yeah, so of course.
She assumed I was in charge, you know.
She power play.
Well, she was mad for me and her friend was mad for Dan. And she said, do you want a nightcap after the dance? And I said, we got in the words of Danny Zuko, tell me more. She says, let's go backstage. Now, backstage is only for the band.
Okay.
And the tay woman. And this one was no tay woman. She said, I'm not in the band, but I can play the flute. Now, as Willie Nelson used to sing, if a bitch get an attitude, pop it while she's hot. You know? And hey, this is Dan Bryan we're talking about. He went to do a Christmas video one time. He thought Lapland was a strip club. So your one grabbed me anyway into the toilet.
Mm.
Well, Jace, wasn't she wearing Kilkenny knickers?
What do you mean?
Kilkenny knickers she was wearing.
Black and amber?
Yeah. I fucking blew the beans straight away. All over the cubicle. It was like forgetting to put the cap on a blender. I swear to God, it was everywhere.
Jesus Christ. Almighty.
Well, I had to win.
Yeah.
I had to finish first.
Yeah.
Couldn't let Kilkenny win. But and this one now, look, not to be casting aspersions on her now or anything, but as Fong would say, she's a bit of a Snow White. What? One woman living in a house with seven small lads. Okay. That was a funny setup, wasn't it? Huh? That was a funny setup. So you're 1 point each now. I have a tiebreak question.
Very good.
The nearest correct answer wins. How many crows did Sparrow Halley shoot last Thursday?
I'm going to say 4.
Maureen?
I'll go with 7.
I'm surprised you didn't text. You know for a fact it was 2.
Sorry. I forgot about that.
You saw the photo. I can only do so much for this young fella.
Sorry, do I win though? I was no! Closest. You said close.
Yeah, but still.
I will claim a hollow victory, Noel. Thanks a million.
Maureen, commiserations. I don't know whether you were wrong or Halley's aim is cat, one or the other.
I'd say his aim is cat.
Good luck.
See ya. She's waiting for lockdown restrictions to ease like a bull waiting to get into a field of cows.
Woo!
Woo! Boom! Maureen, what is your mystery topic this week?
Well, I'll tell you, let me out the gap, lads. I want to do damage.
Says the cow or Maureen?
Okay, so this week's mystery topic is about landlords and renting. So,
thank God it's not periods. We can all uncross our fingers.
We'll go back to vaginas one day, but no, anyway, please. Not today. Have you ever had a bad experience with a landlord? Would you ever be a landlord yourself? Do you have any advice on how to maintain a good relationship with one? Could you cope with renting long term if you didn't own your own house? So, like, I'll just give you a bit of, I don't know, like, you probably haven't rented as much as I have because I went to college in Dublin for 4 years. So, I went to college during the boom years. So you're talking 2004 to 2007.
Oh, big money.
It was a nightmare. And like, you're paying big money for shithole accommodation. The worst house I stayed in was one in second year on South Circular Road. At one stage, there was 7 people sharing the one kitchen.
Oh, jeez.
And the landlord was such a cowboy, right? He had another house nearby, another house full of students. So rather than buy 2 Hoovers for each house, what he'd do is he'd flit the house or flit the Hoover between the 2 houses.
Jesus.
Yeah. You're like so tight and so like mean, like, you know, just it was absolutely god awful. So like, what's your thoughts on being a renter in Ireland? Like, because you were saying there, Smacks, like you were surprised that like, you know, so many people are drawn down mortgages trying to buy in their own house. But when you've gone through, like I was looking at a 2-bed property near me to rent and it was €1,200 a month. Like, whereas a mortgage for to build the same kind of property would be €800 a month. So I just couldn't cope with renting. I'm not emotionally strong enough for being, you know, like some landlords are really good. There's a cottage on our farm that my dad rents out and like, you know, absolutely, it's like such a good arrangement. Your man's lovely and he keeps the garden, the house so, so well. But at the same time, I just need my own 4 walls that, you know, nobody can evict me out of. Unless it's not like, paying the mortgage.
Yeah, the banks will have it then. A lot of people in Ireland, like more so than in other countries, in Germany and stuff, sure, don't they all rent? Like, and then here in Ireland, like, we have a massive thing. We love land and we love like own our own house. And when you grow up, that's what you're meant to do. You're meant to get married, have kids, buy a house, you know, pay through the fucking nose for it.
You have to own the land.
Yeah.
Wasn't there enough fighting going on in this country for land?
but that's it. Like, that's why.
No, I'm not renting to any man or God now. I'm going to own my own house. 4 walls, I'll die in them.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, if I ever go through the stress of building a house, I'll be fucking, I'll be there till I'm dragged out the fucking window. But that's a whole different mystery topic. On landlords, I've rented a good few houses. So like when I was in college, it was kind of some sort of student accommodation. You just paid it at the start of the year and that was it. Like, but there was a lad, he wasn't even a landlord. He was just like working there, keeping an eye on like fucking, I don't know, 100 student apartments.
Yeah,
he was just getting abused every fucking night of the week, lad. There's no money in the world to pay for that.
Did he have any power if you were acting a maggot? Like,
he'd come in and be like, shut the fuck up. He'd be like, fuck off, pay £6,000 for this. Listen, if I want to pull the radiator off the wall and smash up all the cups and saucers, that's. But the only thing is, like, you'd pay a big deposit, like, and you wouldn't get sent back.
Never get
but back. What a lot of students, you know, in fairness to them, they were industrious in as regards, like, if you paid a £2,000 deposit and you broke a radiator, you may as well fucking smash the rest of it up and just not get the £2,000 back. You know, because if you broke a radiator, they'd be like, oh, that radiator was 1,500 and now it's 500 to pay a lad to put it in. Like, so you must be hung for a sheep's lamb.
Yeah.
You must smash the place to the ground. Ragweek and Waterford walk into the house and, like, I could walk into the apartment next door and go, there's no way this is in the same building. It's like fucking Beirut. There's a lad under the table with a rat on top of him. Just plates broke all over the place. And I walked in one Friday. I was going home, like, after Ragweek. I was like, oh, I'll just call, nip into neighbours and see how they got on last night. There was a lad sitting on the armchair, drinking a can, throwing mugs at the wall. I thought, I don't know if college is for me. But that was in college. And then since then I've rented, like, Jesus, I don't know, 1, 2,
like 5
3
places.
Yeah, 3, yeah, 4 probably, yeah. But I've never actually really dealt with the landlord. Like, when I lived with you, you just dealt with the money. We just gave you the money.
Mm.
And, like, it was handy because you were like, it's like, whatever, 50 a week, and that includes bills. And at least I knew I could blow all the rest of my wages on drink, but at least I had the 50 and yeah. I'd be warm and would have electricity and broadband.
Yeah.
So if all else failed, it was a good contingent plan.
100%. We had to include the kitty.
Oh yeah.
In the rent.
Oh, you were not like if I was rent was 30 and then you'd come to me for an ESB bill and I'd be like, yeah, there's €3.60. I think left in my shoe since the weekend that I get Phil.
There's an IOU.
But I actually have never, in all the houses I've rented, I've never actually dealt one-on-one with a landlord. Things have certainly went wrong in houses. Like when I lived with Chalk Ice in that, he looked after the money.
Yeah.
But like he, when I did like, you know, physically hand you the money.
Yeah.
With the Chalk Ice, we had a special drawer. So like we put it in weekly, but then if something came up, we'd just take it all out. So then like, he'd be like, landlord's coming, lads. And we'd be like, oh, fuck, I spent all the month's rent on Saturday. So, yeah, for a finish, like, it was kind of in his name. So, like, we'd be just, like, he'd be like, fuck, yeah, I'll cover it. You just pay it back to me. Like, it was yeah, just, yeah. It was a nightmare, to be
Chalk
honest.
Bank.
I'd rather the landlord come in with a gun and was yeah. like, you fucking pay the rent, lads.
Oh, that's the worst thing, is some fella going, oh, I just need to take 50 euro from the kitty there, boy. Oh, taking man. Money from the kitty.
It's, do you know what? You're as well off, I think, if you have a landlord. This would be my bit of advice from living in loads of different houses. Set up a direct debit from your bank account into the landlord's bank account.
Mm.
You've got it in writing, and then it just comes out of your account every week. You can't spend it.
Yeah.
And there's no putting it in drawers and things going missing and your housemate taking 20 to get a fucking packet of fags. You just, it's gone.
Man, I sympathise with people in Dublin. I talk to people who are students and working and all. Adults, not even sharing apartments, sharing bedrooms.
It should be illegal for over 18s to share bedrooms.
I've seen it, man.
I know. It's tough. I actually feel so sad. That's why, like, when people come down the country and they, like, come in here, like, and we have the studio here, and then they're like, oh, my God, and you've got a garden?
Yeah.
And it's like, what poverty do you live in Dublin? Do you know what I mean? Like, an apartment in Dublin, €2,000 a month. €2,000 a month yeah. tip. You probably have a hotel.
Man.
Honestly, you'd have some gaff for two.
The entire of Care House Hotel.
I don't know. It would be more than that, but, like.
There's not a house in the whole of Tipperary that's more than 1,300-1,400 a month, I'd say.
Yeah.
Even mansions.
Yeah, and you're talking 4 or 5 bedrooms, like. Yeah. I don't even know what the going rate is, but, like, as regards landlords, like, we had a really nice house when I first moved to Care in Rosemount. Do you remember that house?
Yeah.
And it had, like, the big double doors. It was a really nice house, like, but then, you know, you have a 21st and a punch bag goes through the patio door and what are you going to do?
Yeah.
That's living, you know. I feel a bit for landlords are kind of, like, ostracised in Ireland at the moment. It's like, fucking landlord bass. It's like nearly back to pagan times now. It's like, ah, oh, fucking landlord, put the rent up.
Sending the bailiff from yeah, to burn you out.
Yeah, so, ah, oh, landlords. But like,
had to sell a calf.
Any of the houses I lived in, I felt sorry for the landlord.
Why? Oh,
fucking hell, lad. Like, four of us living in the gaff. Like.
Yeah. I'm surprised the landlord would rent a house to four young lads in their.
Yeah, but we had a good reputation.
Oh, really?
Went wrong when we got in the house.
Moral part of the GA club.
Yeah, I know. In fairness, we never broke Atten or like completely acted a maggot. Like, we broke our own stuff for that. It was just a bit like, to be honest, Moral, we didn't break Atten structurally, but I mean, if you don't buy heating oil for a year, odds are your house is going to get damp. So like, instead of buying oil, we'd be like, I'll buy another blanket. That'd be the answer.
Spend small.
Yeah, you know what I mean. And you got to think long term. I can't think of anything else major with landlord. I've never actually dealt with a landlord ever. Johnny?
Yeah, I had a couple of ones. I was living with lads and everyone had a different responsibility. So like, the sky could be not my name.
Okay,
and something yeah. else. Bins was in one guy's name. And yeah, you hadn't been paying the bins. So
what was he doing? Gee, he wasn't fly tipping, please.
No, but I was talking to a landlord who said people moved out and he gave him back the deposit and then found all the rubbish in the attic.
The dirty bastards.
Yeah, that's a true story. So
just on landlords, just popped into my head. One of my buddies, his parents were landlords. I was going in giving them house, cleaning it out, piss, like just like basins of piss in all the rooms.
What?
Yeah. Oh my God.
They were just like not bothering going to tile it obviously at night and just pissing in the base.
How lazy do you have to be?
Yeah, man, they're out there. Yeah, that was fucking
a chamber pot.
No, it was just, I don't know what way you want to put it, but it was a basin full of piss, like. That's what it was. Yeah.
Wow.
Nasty business, man. Sorry, Johnny, back to you. One lad wasn't paying the bins.
So when it came to the end of it, the bins obviously were full. And then he got a mate with a van and into the recycling place. They told me afterwards. And he just got a screw gun and screwed all the bins closed and was like, oh, a bit recycling there. Probably going bulky items. And I was like, oh, yeah, grand, yeah, yeah. Tipped it off like. Three wheelie bins full of God knows what.
You get done for that now.
Yeah. And then I was on to the landlord. I was like, come on, give us back our deposit. And then he was telling me things like, hey, remember I said the fire guard was missing? Yeah. Well, I found it kicked halfway up the chimney. All this stuff was going on. Because I had been like, come on, the house is grand. Like, give us the deposit back. But unknowns to me, there was quite a bit of damage done that I hadn't got.
The best one back in the day was like holes put in walls and holes in wardrobes and that, like, because men of a certain age, like, I find me a man who hasn't punched a wall at one stage or another, like.
John, I was in this house and walking down the stairs for some reason, the ceiling got quite low, you could touch it.
Yeah.
Like going out to This Is Anfield. You know, yeah, you touched it over your head.
Slanted.
And, you know, one of us put the fist through the plasterboard one night and then the landlord was coming. So I got this big poster from Pulp Fiction of John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson in the suits pointing the guns, and I just pinned it up over the hole, and then the landlord came in, inspected and saw that and was like, Pulp Fiction, young lads, what? I was like, I know, yeah, it's a good show, you know? Big 6-inch hole behind the poster. Yeah,
wardrobes and all that, like, just holes everywhere. Like.
No, but before I moved out, I did plaster it myself.
Yeah, yourself. I'd say that was a nice tasty job, I'd say, was it?
So then I got a roller, you know, on a stick that was real long, and I had to try and, I couldn't match the paint exactly, so I tried to roll that entire square of landing, and nobody ever noticed.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, we got our deposit back, because my roommate, when he was handing her back the keys, also gave her a bottle of champagne.
Oh, yeah.
To try and sweeten her.
My man.
Got our 700 euro deposit back.
Jesus Christ.
Great house.
Yeah. No, landlord.
People stealing your food's got to be shit, like. All that sharing the kitchen, sharing the fridge.
Yeah, that's housemates, fucking those bastards. Landlords, I wouldn't have an interest now in even being a landlord or dealing with people. Like, I don't want someone ringing me on a Sunday and, like, the sink doesn't work. It's like, that's good. You know I'm a podcaster. Yeah? Not a fucking plumber.
Do you want me to send you a video?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Johnny Smack. Yeah. Best to look with your new sink.
Yeah. I send them back a shout out.
Oh,
put them on my story.
Big shout out to the
GoFundMe.
The S bend underneath the sink there.
I'd be sharing it on my GoFundMe. Yeah,
there's a lad downtown there needs a new pipe.
No, I think if you were, you'd be getting someone to manage that, wouldn't you? You can get services like that. I just couldn't be fucking dealing with it.
Why, Mara, what do you reckon?
Bad enough paying my own rent.
I'd be careful who I'd rent to if I was a landlord. Like, I do feel sorry for them, but, like, same time, they are making some amount of coin at the minute. Like, so,
50% tax.
I don't know. I remember when I was actually abroad in Chicago, and the student apartment accommodation building we were in, there is actually some students from UCD there. And there was these four lads, they were like law students, like they're really like D4 posh dickheads. Anyway, one night they destroyed their apartment, like absolutely ruined it. And then
in tannin hair gel.
Yeah. Oh, like completely, but like broke, like just covered the floor in food. And then they asked for our help because the three DIT girls like asked for our help. Because they were worried that they were going to get kicked out because they'd ruined their apartment, and I refused to. And they got suspended from college and had to go back to Ireland. I was like, you privileged pricks, like you shouldn't be doing that. So, yeah.
It's good to know that you don't judge a book by its cover anymore.
Sorry, but I would like to hear from the listeners on this. Like, what's it like if you're renting at the minute?
Yeah.
And I'd like to hear landlords taking it as well because
there's not as much money in it as you. Sorry, Mara, to interrupt. Sorry. I just mean there's not as much money in it as people think. If you've got a house in care and you're going to rent it out, so you'd be lucky to get 800 to 1,000 for in care.
Yeah.
Let's say you're getting 1,000 euro. So that's 12 grand a year.
Yeah.
Mm.
Between a few bits of expenses and tax, you're losing about half it.
Mm.
6 grand a year.
Yeah. The money's in owning 10 houses.
Yeah. You're not going to be a millionaire off one house.
Yeah.
Slow money,
slow money, boy.
But safe money.
There you go, boy. There you go.
Safe as
front a hatter. From Johnny Shrewd. But yeah, it'd be nice to hear listeners' nightmare landlord stories, or landlord nightmare tenant stories, whichever way. Get them into the podcast. We're looking for correspondence. We're on the hunt. Thanks, Mara. Enjoyed that. Don't forget to rate, review, tell your friends about the Two Johnnies podcast. Use the hashtag Two Johnnies Pod, the number Two Johnnies Pod. And you can get us on Instagram at the Two Johnnies. We'll be back on it next week. And yeah, you can email podcast@thetwojohnnies.ie.
And let us know how Neil has been doing.
Yeah. There you go, Neil. We're going to get reviews on you now into sent into the podcast.
Managing the...
Now, tradition time, Johnny. We always finish the podcast with our Yurts and Dirts of the Week. What have you got, John?
Talking about building. Mm. Shout out to the builders. Can't get stuff.
Yeah.
Going to the hardware store. I was in a mill during the week getting timber. He said, can't get it. Can't get 9x2s, can't get 4x2s. I don't know where it's coming from. All the lads are looking for pipe. They can't get pipe.
Jeez.
There's people looking for
a pipe shortage.
Who's making it? Germany, China. Poke out the pipe to fuck. There's lads here. They want to get the pipes. They want to get their hands dirty. The boom is out in the hallway waiting to come in. Yeah. There's fellas in high-vis underpants.
I even bought Snickers. I'll fucking lay a pipe.
We're ready to go. Do you know what I mean? We want to do it.
Yeah.
We've the stuff to do, but we haven't the stuff to do it. So a shout out to the builders. The price of construction has gone through the roof.
Yeah.
The lads are saying there's no money in it. No one's going to want to build a whole scheme of houses because the price of materials has gone through the roof.
We'll have to mind the builders, lad. We've gone to fuck.
Builders under pressure. Get it poked out, lad. Get the timber poked out to the boys.
My yurt.
Well.
Got to meet the new dog, the new arrival in the family.
Well.
Lovely little thing.
This is Ted Hastings.
Yeah, Ted Hastings.
What is it? A golden doodle?
A golden doodle. A Shredroni small.
What age?
Lovely. Around the size of my hand. It's a little bit bigger. Like, up my hand to my wrist.
How many weeks old?
What is he? 5 weeks.
Oh, geez, he's young.
Yeah, 5 weeks old. Just went down for now, a little peek.
You wouldn't be getting at least 10 in here?
I think say between 8 and 9.
Oh, Jesus.
Maybe it could be more than that. Maybe more than 5. Anyway, really small. And like, did like, you know, they were like, there's 2 or 3 of them. And I was like, oh my God. Didn't know which one. And then one of them just like latched onto me. I was like, yeah, that's okay, man. What the fuck am I going to look after you? And he was like, I like this one. I was like, yeah, whatever.
She's going to be looking after it.
Yeah, I know. I was like, no, you can pick. She was like, yeah, that one's nice. One of them was real nervous.
Oh, you don't want that?
Yeah, so I was like, picked up this lad and wrapped around me. I was like, yeah, you're the one, boy.
Me and you, kid.
It's me and you again, the world, boy. See that one over there? I know, it was nice. It was lovely. I think I'm starting to you know, come around to the idea.
Nah, you've got carpets in your house.
Yeah, a bit of negativity over that. Your man told me they don't shed that much. The golden doodles.
Yeah, but they pee.
I won't let them in the sitting room. Okay. I only have carpet in the sitting room.
Right, okay. How long is this going to last?
Sure, he'll be out after a few weeks.
Other people.
And he painted some fences during the week. We're fencing the backyard for him now at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like, you know, I'm not, obviously. Yeah, I felt bad on the other day. I was like driving past and she was just out painting the fences. I was like, you're doing that. I swear to God, it was totally roles reversed in my house this week. Now that I just think of it. She was out painting the fence with her man. And I went out and was like, would you like an ice pop? And then like, and then the other day I was in doing the clothes. Like, now I enjoy like doing, I like folding clothes. You know, I'm pretty good at folding clothes. So I work in clothes shops.
Yeah, in particular.
Yeah, so I was out like folding clothes and Annie went past on the ride on lawnmower.
Does her father give you any guff?
On to my dirt of the week.
Well.
Just before coming in for the podcast today, Annie got a phone call. She was like, they're putting the calves out in the field, like first day, like, will you give a hand there just to like fill a gap?
Yeah.
Because there's not much when it comes to farming I can do. So like standing in a gap is probably one thing, right? So they load up the calves, bring them down, walk down to the field anyway, and they're like, you go in that corner. I was like, yeah, grand job, no bother. So they've got like, you know, whatever electric fence around. They let the calves out, 15 calves into the field. I've seen calves going into field before. Like, you know, they jump around, they go a bit haywire.
Excited.
Like, they're grand, like after a while. Well, these lads got out. They were like fucking racehorses. All run around in a big heap like it was a running race. Next thing, one of them cleared a ditch. Two cleared a ditch. Three. Two more went out over the far ditch. One lad was heading for the road. And like, but when they come towards it, like, I didn't know what you're meant to do. You know, yeah. So they gave me like a bit of a length of pipe. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, you know, so I just spread myself wide like a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And they were all coming towards me, and I was going, "Get back! Get back!" And they were like, "Don't shout." I was like, "Get back!" Like pure fear in my voice. I actually think I have a recording.
Record yourself?
No, I was trying to record the cows. I was like, or the calves. I was like, this'll look. I was like, this'll look cool.
I'll show this to the boys.
Yeah, I'm gonna like show this to the boys. So I think I have it here. One sec. That's my attempt of like trying to calm them down and make them not jump over the. They all go over the fence eventually anyway. But you have to come real wide at them. I didn't know, like, you know, like Annie and all the family are farmers. They knew the crack, like, so like, yeah. My thing would be, oh, he's loose, run quick and get as close to him as you can, like you were catching a child, like. But you don't, you go real wide.
Pincer
so
you,
yeah, you corner the fuckers. I didn't try wanting to know this, like. So the more I was chasing them, the more they were freaking out, like. So I was just trying to outrun them.
Yeah.
Note to self, you won't outrun calves.
They're quick enough.
They're nippy yokes. So eventually, anyway, we had to knock back the interview with Tony Griffin by half an hour because I was late. Because I couldn't leave and the job half done.
No.
You know, like, but right, at one stage then, they were impressed. They were impressed by me fitness and me will to do it. So like, there was a good few fields together and I was going after them. But I wasn't sure if the electric fence was on.
Yeah,
you know, because they were going buck wild. They had no regard for it. They broke stakes and everything. Oh, they broke up the place.
Jesus.
So I'd done a class move, and Annie was like, "Who do you think you are, Tom Cruise?" So I was running along, and you know, the fence would be maybe that height.
Wait, height.
And I was running like fucking pegging it, and I was like, "Will I try and go over it or what?" And then I didn't have the confidence to go over it, so I ran right as fast as I could, and just done a roll. Roll, like, you know, like a sausage roll, yeah. But at full pace.
Yeah.
Rolled under the electric fence and all in one motion got back up onto my feet. And to be honest, I forgot about the calf because I was running along going, "That's fucking unbelievable." I was like, "I hope someone got that in video, what I just did there." So eventually, an hour later, calves are all settled now. Electric fence is back, it's working, and they're all happy in the field. But that was my experience, lad. And as you can tell from the sheer worry in my voice, but it starts off as like, "Whoa, whoa," and then when like they get close, I'm like, "Ah," you can just pick out that moment where I'm just panicked. So yeah, and to answer the question, what does Annie Satter think of me? I don't know, not very little, I'd say. that was my week. Yurts and dirts, by all animal related this week for me. Have you got a dirt?
No.
Or a yurt? Are you happy enough?
I got pig's head.
Yeah,
to cook.
I got PTSD from the factory when he pulled it out.
Oh no. Smacks was standing over by the kettle. I opened the fridge and he's like, "Hey lad, catch," and I threw the pig's head at him.
Obviously, oh. with great hands I caught it and then was just threw it straight back at him. Yeah.
It's a half a head, still has the ear and all the whole lot, so I'm gonna cook it Friday night now. I'll give it about four hours nicely.
I call in Saturday when the smell is gone.
I'm really looking forward to it.
I'll
report back next week.
Yeah, do let us know. The country will be waiting with bated breath, lad, to find out how the pig's head goes.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
That's it for another week. We hope you're keeping well. Listen, positive, bit of positive vibes. The weather's up.
Keep the head.
The announcement from the government seems to have given us some sort of a roadmap. Now, whether those boys will stick, it's another kettle of fish. But sure, we'll stay positive anyway for the moment. So, from me, Johnny Smacks.
From me, Johnny B.
From me, Maura.
And for me, Neil.
There you go. A little bit of Neil. We had to get a little bit of Neil in there. Go on. Good luck.
Good luck.